This is Donald S. Reinhardt. I am reading from my newly written book called The Encyclopedia of the Pivot System for All Brass Instruments. I will continue with the tonguing chapter. Question 45. What forms of the T attack are used in brass playing? Because of the traditional and accepted modes of interpretation of the standard symphonic works and the many and varied ideas imposed by the conductor, the T forms of attack being presented may deviate to some extent. However, they have been presented in as concise a manner as possible. Number one, piccato attack. This mode of attack is indicated by a caret inserted over or under the note, as the case may be. It means that the note is to be played at one quarter of its written value. For example, a quarter note marked with a caret indication would be played as a 16th note followed by a 16th and an 8th rest. The piccato attack is generally marked 40, fortissimo, or sforzando, and seldom at a softer dynamic indication. Some performers insist that this is the one attack that must be stopped by a second forward stroke of the tongue, that is T-E-T, in order to bite it. I am convinced, however, that the syllable T-E-H, te, is quite adequate for this form of musical pronouncement. Number two, staccato attack. This mode of attack is indicated by a dot inserted over or under the note. It is played at one half of its written value, and the player should enunciate a short syllable T-E-H, te. This attack is used at practically all but the very loudest dynamic levels. Number three, medium attack. This mode of attack is indicated by no markings directly over or under the note. It is played at three quarters of its written value, and the player should enunciate the syllables ta, tu, or ti, depending upon the register being played. Concentrate on the sound of palm, that is P-O-M, as this most closely describes the desired effect. Number four, accented attack. This mode of attack is indicated by a horizontal check mark, which opens at the head of the note and closes at the end of the note. Like the medium attack, it is played at three quarters of its written value, and the player should enunciate the syllables ta, tu, or ti, depending upon the register being played. It is identical to the medium attack, except it is played with an accentuated head on the note. It, too, is used at all but the very loudest dynamic levels. Number five, tenuto or sostenuto attack. This mode of attack is indicated by a horizontal line over or under the note, as the case may be. It is played at its full written value, and the performer should enunciate the syllables ta, tu, or ti, depending upon the register being played. This mode of attack is used at all but the very loudest dynamic levels. Number 6, sustained attack. This mode of attack is indicated by a little tent or inverted V over or under the note as the case may be. Like the tenuto or sostenuto attacks, it is played at full value. However, it is heavily attacked and heavily sustained throughout. The performer should enunciate the syllables ta, tu, or ti, depending upon the register being played. This attack is almost always used at a forte, fortissimo, or fortissimo level of dynamics. Brass performers call this mode of articulation the windiest of all. A good example of this form of attack is used in the Pilgrim's Chorus from Tannhäuser by Wagner. Oddly enough, in the dance band field, this symbol calls for a short, pointed, loud attack and is sometimes referred to as the attack with a bite. Certain European notations are slightly different from the indications prescribed. However, the interpretation is practically identical. Every performer should master the 6 forms of T attack because this schooling is essential to make yourself do a certain thing at a certain time in a certain manner spells control. Question 46. Should the tongue stroke always be as relaxed as possible? Absolutely, because when it is, number 1, the embouchure vibrating response remains supple and sensitive. Number 2, the overall playing consistency is improved. Number 3, the control of dynamics is enhanced. Number 4, the overall sound is of a much finer timbre. Number 5, the tonal timbre of both the slurred and tongued articulations is practically identical. Number 6, the tongue's speed is far greater. Number 7, the embouchure and tongue endurance is tremendously enhanced. Number 8, the tongued passages are far more fluent and effortless. Number 9, the performer's playing confidence is enhanced. Remember, relaxed tonguing does not mean sloppy tonguing. Question number 48. Question number 48. Is it always to the player's advantage to master the art of rapid single tonguing before delving into double and triple tonguing? Even though rapid single tonguing is far more versatile and useful than double and triple tonguing, it is often advantageous to abandon temporarily the rapid single tonguing project, since all 3 forms of rapid tonguing, that is, rapid single, double, and triple, require the mastery of the short, pointed tongue stroke, which hits high in the mouth, excepting tongue types 4, 7, and 8, it seems highly illogical to expend unnecessary time on this point, if other approaches may work to the player's advantage. Some performers have considerably more difficulty in mastering this short, pointed, high stroke for the rapid single tongue than for the double or triple tongue. It is vital that this rapid tongue stroke be mastered in one way or another. It is obvious that the simplest approach should be chosen. This principle caters to the individual differences and gives the performer sufficient time to eradicate the tongue penetration habit without retarding the development of other playing factors. Question 49. Should triple tonguing always be presented before double tonguing, as it is in most instruction books? Positively not. When catering to the individual physical differences, sometimes it is far easier to make the double tongue approach rather than the triple tongue. Every player should be tested very carefully on this point so that he does not work against Mother Nature. Question number 50. Why do certain foreign methods advocate the use of the double tongue on both binary, that is simple, and ternary, that is compound, rhythmical figurations? Perhaps they are trying to simplify the rapid forms of tonguing by producing every form of rapid tongue articulation with an identical tongue approach. Thus, they completely disregard the triple tongue articulation by tonguing their triplets, TKT or 2KU2, rather than DDG or DEG-DEG-GET. Unfortunately, when a ternary, that is a compound rhythmical formation, is double tongued, the rhythmical impulses in most cases suffer considerably. I have heard very few performers who could accomplish this in a satisfactory manner. In my opinion, duple rhythms should be double-tongued. Ternary rhythms, triple-tongued. This, I feel, is mechanically and musically the correct approach. Question number 51. Why do some students find it difficult or impossible to master the art of triple and double-tonguing? Because of a general lack of physical knowledge and understanding of the problem at hand, and the use of a stereotyped and incorrect syllables, that is, 2-2-KU for triple tongue and 2-KU for double tongue, which are being handed down by instruction books and teachers. Many students find it difficult or impossible to master the art of triple and double tongue. These incorrect syllables, which unfortunately are traditional, require a tongue stroke that is entirely too long and a throat syllable that is too labored for any form of rapid articulation. By enunciating a pointed DDG or DADAGE for the triple articulation and the pointed DG or DAGE for the double tongue, the D or DEH tongue stroke is shortened considerably and the G or GEH throat syllable remains in the fore part of the mouth, where the minimized movement not only makes speeds possible, but effortless. I've never seen a student fail to develop a good triple and double tongue when this advice was heeded. Question 52. Why does the tongue seem more agile if the instrument is pointed in a slightly downward angle? The tongue often seems more agile if the instrument is pointed in a slightly downward angle because this encourages the tongue to strike higher in the mouth, where the stroke is much shorter. Remember, the shorter the tongue stroke, the greater the tongue speed. It is preferable, however, to shorten the tongue stroke without lowering the angle of the instrument. Question number 53. When attacking staccato notes in succession, should a synchronized diaphragmatic and abdominal region thrust or palpitation be experienced with each note? No synchronized spasmodic palpitation or thrust should ever be tolerated in the diaphragm and abdominal regions during the playing of staccato notes in succession. The even blowing principle must be applied to both slurred and tongued passages. Strive for a constant flow of air from the beginning to the end of the phrase and support it by a consistent lift in the diaphragm and abdominal regions. Diaphragmatic palpitations synchronized with the tongue action of each attack only assure you of early tongue and embouchure fatigue. Tremendous variations in tonal timbre and intonation, a sluggish tongue, and scores of other playing evils. Question number 54. If rapid single, double, and triple tonguing is being articulated on the same pitch, should the tip of the tongue strike the same spot in the mouth for all three rapid tongue forms? As previously stated, for any given pitch, the tip of the tongue must strike the same spot in the mouth, regardless of whether rapid single, double, or triple tongue is being utilized. The importance of following this simple rule cannot be overemphasized because it prevents dead spots from occurring in the speeds between the rapid single tongue and the double or triple tongue. Then you will not have to say that the passage is too fast to single tongue, but too slow to double or triple tongue, because your double or triple tongue takes over exactly where your single tongue leaves off, thereby overlapping the tongue speeds. Question 55. While practicing rapid single, double, and triple tonguing without the mouthpiece or instrument, why is it so necessary that a high pitch be sung simultaneously? While practicing rapid single, double, and triple tonguing without the mouthpiece or instrument, singing a high pitch, that is without straining, of course, gives the tongue its required elevation where the tongue stroke is short and maximum speeds can be obtained. It also assists the player in mastering the correct combined blowing and tongue sensation. Singing figures, where the various forms of rapid tonguing are required, definitely assists the player while he is passing through the stages of rapid tongue development. This form of practice is invaluable and certainly should not be overlooked. Question number 56. While striving for speed in the rapid tongue forms, why should the tongue enunciate a pointed D or DEH rather than the traditional two articulation? The syllable two is generally pronounced with too long a tongue backstroke, and the placement of the tongue in the mouth cavity is too low to be conducive of any form of speed. The pointed D or DEH elevates the position of the tongue and shortens its stroke so that rapid tonguing is possible. If the pointed D or DEH syllable is developed properly, the attacks will sound crisp and defined at great speeds with a minimum of effort. Question number 57. Why do some instructors tell their students to execute the first syllable of the triple and double tongue forms with a ha, who, or he, no tongue enunciation? Since a ha, who, or he, no tongue enunciation is executed without manipulating the tongue in the usual manner, the suggested no tongue approach is certainly one of relaxation. The triple tongue form, when executed in this manner, would be ha da ga, ha da ga da, ha da ga da, ha da ga da. And the vowel would change with the register being played. The first note, ha, is executed without the usual tongue manipulation. The second note, da, is executed with a soft tongue enunciation. And the third note, ga, is enunciated by an emission from the throat. The double tongue form, when executed in this manner, would be ha-ga. And the vowel would be altered with the register being played. The first note, ha, is executed without the usual tongue manipulation. And the second note, ga, is executed by an emission from the throat. In the pivot system, the ha, who, and he, no tongue attacks, are certainly recognized for their assistance in developing and maintaining maximum embouchure vibrating fluency. On the other hand, when used in the manner just described for triple and double tonguing, they become superfluous. By enunciating the pointed D, D, G, or D, D, G,
for triple tone, and DG or de ge for double tone, a student will be developing just as rapidly and thoroughly as possible. Question number 58. Why is it so necessary to decrease the level of dynamics while striving for the utmost in tongue velocity? Since pianissimo playing demands a short tongue backstroke and the fortissimo playing demands a long tongue backstroke, it becomes quite obvious that speed and excessive volume are not partners. The shorter the tongue manipulation, the greater the tongue velocity. Thus, the level of the dynamics must be reduced to allow a shorter, faster tongue stroke. If you increase the volume, you automatically increase the length of the tongue backstroke. Therefore, you are working away from speed rather than toward it. Remember, soft and fast, loud and slow, and your rapid tonguing problems will be simplified. Question number 59. What methods may be employed to increase the tongue velocity? The tongue velocity may be increased. 1. By thoroughly comprehending the position and the manipulation of the tongue as given in the first category of speed. 2. By making certain that excessive volume is not employed when striving for speed. 3. By minimizing all throat, mouth, head, embouchure, and instrument movement. 4. By not expecting a crisp staccato too soon, especially while striving to synchronize the tongue and valve combinations or the tongue and slide positions. 5. By practicing finger or position dexterity drills daily so that sluggish finger or slide manipulation does not retard your rapid tongue goal. 6. By practicing the ha, hu, and he no tongue attacks daily to enhance embouchure vibrating fluency. 7. By realizing that tongue endurance is vital and consistent daily practice is necessary to develop and maintain it. 8. By constantly maintaining a backward, slightly down, and relaxed head position. Question number 60. What are the disadvantages of a tensed, stiff tongue? A tensed, stiff tongue creates 1. Tremendous limitations in overall tongue speed. 2. Premature tongue fatigue. 3. Premature embouchure fatigue. 4. Distortion in sound during the tonguing. 5. Timbre variations in slurred and tongued articulations. 6. Too many missed notes. 7. Lack of playing confidence. Question number 61. Is it possible for a relaxed tongue to become a playing disadvantage? When relaxation is carried to such a point that the tongue loses its contour and falls to a lower position in the mouth, all tonguing definition will be seriously hampered. Relax does not mean collapse. The goal must be to keep the tongue as relaxed as possible without altering its contour or position in the mouth. This brings consistent results. Question number 62. Should the modern brass performer strive to develop and maintain a good triple and double tongue, capable of scale and arpeggio execution, even if he is not called on to use this type of articulation during his engagements? By all means, yes, because all advanced departments of playing that fall within the player's capabilities contribute notably to his much-needed playing confidence. Building playing reserve in range, power, endurance, flexibility, technique, and so forth is a potent factor toward professional poise and relaxation because the abundant technical development far exceeds the playing demands of the most difficult engagement. Question 63. Is it possible to develop rapid single, double, and triple tonguing to such an extent that even the loudest level of dynamics can be achieved without any appreciable loss of tongue dexterity? Though in the minority, some performers have succeeded in developing their rapid single, double, and triple tongue articulation to such an extent that they are able to maintain a tremendous speed even up to and including the loudest level of dynamics. Unfortunately, however, many performers do not possess the perseverance or the ambition to study and practice the rapid modes of tongued articulation until this high level of development has been achieved, especially since their type of employment does not demand its usage. In my opinion, once maximum speed and definition have been accomplished in scale and arpeggio formation with rapid single, double, and triple tonguing, then diligent study and practice should be devoted to extending the range of dynamic levels, both soft and loud, with special emphasis on the fortissimo level. If the increase of volume retards the tongue manipulation to a slower tempo, then more time is required to master the necessary compensation between the two factors. The louder level of dynamics must be accomplished in a very gradual fashion, and this achievement often requires several months of hard work. As previously stated, all rapid single, double, and triple tonguing should be mastered in legato as well as the traditional staccato form. This is Donald S. Reinhardt. I am reading from my newly written book called The Encyclopedia of the Pivot System for All Brass Instruments. I have just concluded Chapter 4 on tonguing. I will now continue on Chapter 5, Physical Type Definition and Analysis for Correct Pivoting. A detailed embouchure and jaw discussion. Question number 1. What is the basic rule governing the production of sound on a cupped mouthpiece brass instrument? In order to produce a sound on any cupped mouthpiece brass instrument, the lips must vibrate. Therefore, the lips must line up with the teeth in such a manner that the teeth neither interrupt nor interfere with the lip vibrations in any particular part of the range. Because the pivot system makes this principle possible over the entire range of the instrument, it becomes a must for all performers.